the following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 34, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on September 24th, 2011, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Tadvidi pranipatena, pariprasnena sevaya, upadekshyanti te jnanam, jnaninastatvadarshinaha, tadvidi pranipatena, pariprasnena sevaya, upadekshanti te jnanam, jnaninastatvadarshinaha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord Himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without fulfilling this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatha Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivishakandvitamscha. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Himself the Absolute Truth, has given us the system by which we can realize the Absolute Truth. He tells us to approach the bona fide spiritual master, to inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. Why? Because these self-realized souls, the bona fide spiritual masters, they can impart knowledge unto the sincere disciple, because they have seen the truth. So it's very important, if one actually wants to realize the Supreme Truth, that one has to find a person who represents that Supreme Truth. In any subject matter, any advanced subject matter, we study under the learned expert. If I want to become a lawyer, I must go to the law college and study under the law professor. If I want to become a medical doctor, I have to go to the medical college and study under the medical professor. Any advanced science, I have to study under an expert in that field. Not that I can simply read the law books or the medical books and become a qualified lawyer or physician. I must be studied directly under the capable guidance of the law professor or the medical professor. So in the same way, to actually become realized in the transcendental science, one has to study under the bona fide spiritual master. And how is that study done? That is described here. What is the means? Do you simply take knowledge? No. If you simply take knowledge, you won't realize it. To realize the knowledge that you receive from the spiritual master, you have to serve the spiritual master. It's by that service to the spiritual master that the concepts now become concretely realized within your heart. So this principle of serving the spiritual master or surrendering oneself to the spiritual master is a vital aspect of the guru-disciple relationship. It's not like simply going to the university, taking some knowledge from the teacher, and then using it for your own purposes. That may be okay for mathematics, but it won't work with spiritual knowledge. If you want to actually realize the Supreme Truth, then you have to approach the bona fide representative of Krishna, and you have to surrender yourself to him. Krishna confirms this in the Adi Puranam. He says, Yeme bhakta jana parata, na me bhaktashtate janaha mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. He says, my dear Arjuna, the one who is my devotee, na me bhaktas, he's not my devotee. That's a pretty heavy statement. Krishna says, the one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. Ye me bhakta jana prata na me bhaktas, he's not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So Krishna wants to see how much this person is devoted to his devotee. There is nobody more dear to Krishna than his devotees. So if you want to approach Krishna, you want to become recognized by Krishna, you want to become dear to Krishna, then you have to become devoted to the devotees of Krishna, you see. And the spiritual master, he is the topmost devotee of Krishna. So one cannot bypass this principle. If one wants to realize the highest truth, one cannot bypass this principle of approaching the bona fide spiritual master. This is confirmed in the Mundaka Upanishad. Tadviganartam sarumeva bigatschet samit pranihi shrotiyam brahmanishtam. If you want to realize that highest truth, then sagurum eva bigatschet, then you must approach Guru. In Sanskrit language, the endings of the verbal ending change the meaning. So, gachati means he goes, gachanti means they go, and gachchat means must go. So, Mundakupanishad says, sagurum eva bigatschat. One must go to Guru if one wants to realize the truth. It's not optional. It's absolutely required. One must go to Guru. One wants to realize the truth. So how do you recognize a bona fide Guru? That is also stated. The Vedic wisdom is complete. It tells you acquire a Guru, and it tells you how to recognize who is a bona fide Guru. Everything is there, perfect in the Vedic wisdom. It says, Shrotiyam Brahmanishtam. Shrotiyam, that means he has heard the Vedic wisdom, the Shruti. He has heard the Vedic wisdom. He is repeating the Vedic wisdom. He is fixed in the Vedic wisdom. He's not inventing his own doctrines or his own teachings. He's simply purely transmitting Shruti, Shrotiyam, and what's the next word? Brahmanishtam. Brahmanishta means fixed. Brahma means the absolute truth. He is fixed in the absolute truth. That supreme absolute truth has three phases: Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. The bona fide spiritual master has perfectly realized what is Brahman. He has perfectly realized what is Paramatma, and he has perfectly realized what is Bhagavan. That is the meaning of Brahmanishtam. He is perfectly fixed in realizing the absolute in all three phases. You see, if he only realizes Brahman, he's incomplete in his realization. If he only realizes the Brahman and the Paramatma, he is still incomplete in his realization. But if he has realized Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, then Brahmanishtam. He is solidly fixed in the realization of the Absolute Truth. One who has not realized Bhagavan, he is not solidly fixed in his Brahman. That is confirmed in the Bhagavatam. Arukrishchaina parang padam padam padantmicho yad yadvishanushvadangriyaha. And those who simply realize the Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, patanti yadho, they fall back down again into material existence. Do you want a spiritual master who's going to fall back down into material existence? Who's only partially realized the Absolute Truth? No. It's like going to a doctor that, you know, can't fully cure you. Why waste time with such a physician who can't actually cure you, permanently cure your disease? You see, if I'm suffering from cancer, I'm going to go on an expert physician who can fully wipe out my cancer for good, you see. Not just a temporary relief. I want a doctor who completely, permanently wipe out my cancer, you see. So, one who has simply realized Brahman, he's not as competent. One who has simply realized Paramatma, he's a little more competent, but still he is not fully competent. But that spiritual master who has fully realized what is Bhagavan, which includes within it Paramatma realization and Brahman realization, that is the spiritual master one should go to. Brahman, that is the meaning of Brahmanishtam. He is firmly fixed in his realization of the Absolute Truth. So, if one goes to such a spiritual master, how should you go? The injunction says, samitpanihi shroti. Yes, samitpanihi means with firewood. In the previous ages, the system was to perform yajnas, sacrifice, fire sacrifice. You see. So formally, the disciple, he would serve the guru by bringing firewood. You see. But in this age, we have a different yajna. The yuga dharma of this age is sankirtan yajna, this congregational chanting. So to serve the spiritual master in this age, you should participate in the congregational chanting. You see. That is the meaning of Samit Panihi in this age. You participate, you bring your, instead of bringing firewood, you bring your voice and you join the kirtan. That's how you bring firewood for the guru. You join in the sankirtan. That is how you join, participate in the yajna in this Kali Yuga. This Kali Yuga, although it is very materialistic, it is the most materialistic age, it is actually the best age for becoming spiritually awakened, because the distinction between spiritual life and material life is very clear in this age. In previous ages, it's a more fuzzy line between the material life and spiritual life. But in this age, it's black, it's clearly black and white. You take the spiritual pathway and achieve the spiritual world, or you take the material life and you go to hell. This modern day civilization, they're simply going to hell. Wine, women, and song, you see. Simply going to hell. It's a very clear distinction. Meat, wine, women, and song. A very clear distinction, you see. Someone may say, but the Kshatriyas, they ate meat. But that was actual Kshatriya who were fighting warriors. You see, that's the real meaning of Kshatriya. They were allowed to, in fact, they had to perfect their and keep their killing techniques very sharp. So when an enemy comes, they can immediately kill that enemy. Fearlessly, they can run forward and defeat that enemy in battle. So what to do when there's no war going on? How do you practice your fighting skills? They would go to the forest and they would kill the wild animals that were disturbing the meditation of the sages. You see. So in this way, the Kshatriyas would practice the killing art. And they were allowed to take the flesh of such animals, you see. But it's not that Kshatriya doesn't mean just an ordinary person whose forefathers was a Kshatriya, and now he can eat meat because his forefathers were Kshatriyas. It doesn't mean slaughterhouse meat. The Kshatriyas took the meat that they personally killed, fighting the ferocious animals in the forest. That meat they would take, nothing else. There was no slaughter, no question of slaughterhouse, you see. Personally they would kill the ferocious animal, then they could take that meat. So that is the but that is not the normal diet. That was only in an exceptional situation. Not that they were normally eating meat. The Vedic culture was vegetarian diet. Krishna prescribes vegetarian diet in Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam palam tayam yome bhakta priyachati. You see, if you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, food or water, I will accept it. Where does Krishna said he'll accept meat? He doesn't say he'll accept meat anywhere. Nowhere in the Vedic scriptures does Krishna say you can offer me meat. It's described that meat is forbidden, actually, in the scriptures. It's described. It's described clearly that meat is forbidden. So Krishna says, if you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, food or water, I will accept it. So one may ask, what is the value of offering food to Krishna? And eating the remnants of food offered to Krishna. That is clearly described in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text number 13, Yagyashishta Shirashanto Muchante Sarvakil Bishai Bunjate Tetvagam Papam Yipashant Yatmakaranam. The devotees of our Lord are released from all kinds of sins. Why? Because they eat food which has been offered first for sacrifice Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So Krishna says if we eat sacrificial food, food offered to him, that is the meaning of yajna. Yajna Shishna means the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. If our diet consists of yajna shishta, the remnants of yajna or prasad, you see, then that purifies us of all sin. And the foods which are allowed in that yajna, they're vegetarian food. Patram pushpam palam tayam. There is no mention of flesh, mamsa. Actually, it's very interesting, the word for flesh in Sanskrit. In Sanskrit, is a very, very rich with meaning language. The word mamsa is composed of two syllables. Mamsa, mam means he, and sa means he. So mamsa means literally me, he. So now it's me eating he. In the next life, it'll be he eating me, you see. Mm. So if one wants to eat flesh, he should be prepared in his next life to be eaten by the very animal that he has killed in this life. Or he has paid someone to kill. You see, now that's modern day system. You pay somebody at the restaurant or the hamburger, the McDonald's, to kill the animal for you. Well, you get implicated and the murderer is implicated. The cook is implicated, everybody is implicated. Everybody is an accomplice to the murder of that cow. And everybody will have to take birth as a cow to be eaten. You see, that's their karma. So, the good news is, we may have many sinful activities that we've committed in this lifetime, if we will surrender to Krishna, as he describes in Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami mahashubhah. Surrender to me, give up all other activities, fully surrender yourself to me. If you do, sarva papebhyo mokshayishami, I'll wipe out all your sin. Doesn't matter what you've done. If you'll surrender to me, sarva papebhyo means all sins, moksha yashami, I'll deliver you from all of your sins. So it doesn't matter what we may have done, you see. If we'll surrender to Krishna under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, as he is telling us to do right here in chapter 4, then we become liberated from all of our past sins. We'll be liberated from the entanglement in the cycle of birth and death, will become empowered to regain our original identity in the spiritual world. We weren't always here in the samsara, you know. It's not that we've always been in samsara. Now we're caught up in samsara, the cycle of birth and death, but we haven't always been here. There was a time beyond time when we lived with the Lord Himself in a loving relationship, in an eternal spiritual form in the spiritual sky. But due to a misuse of independence, we have fallen into this time and space dimension, where we've been caught up since time immemorial in this syndrome of birth, death, old age, and disease, going through species after species after species after species. So now we find ourselves in the human form. The human form is a very rare opportunity. Now you have the opportunity to get up, you see. An animal is not inclined to come here. How many dogs have come tonight to hear this discourse? You see, I don't see one dog here. I don't see any cats either. Any cats here? No, I don't see any dogs or cats who've come to hear. I see only human beings who've come tonight to hear this discourse. So the human being, he has some inclination to hear about the absolute truth. The animals don't have such, and the plants, they have no inclination. So utilize your inclination as a human being to inquire about the absolute truth, to hear about the absolute truth, for the purpose of realizing the Absolute Truth under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. If you will do this, he wants to take birth again. Purnarjanmana vidyate, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 16. Purnarjanmana vidyate, he will never take birth again. So you can get out of this cycle of birth and death if you take up the pathway of Krishna bhakti. It doesn't require you have to give up your job, give up your wife, give up your husband, give up your career, give up your studies. Whatever you're doing now, do continue. But offer the result of that to Krishna. That's what he states in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 27. Yat kadoshi yadasnasi yad jahosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasya shikanteya tat kadisho madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So you can continue whatever you're doing, however you're earning your livelihood, that's okay. Except maybe a butcher. That's a pretty heavy karma. If you're a butcher, we recommend looking for another occupation. A very ghastly thing to kill the animals. But in most occupations are okay. You just continue in your occupation. And you offer the result of that occupation in the service of Krishna. And in this way, you develop your love for Krishna. At the time of leaving your body, you want it to take birth again in this material world. We are not meant to suffer here in the cycle of birth and death. We are meant to enjoy an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the message that I have heard from my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi, Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. And this is the message I bring to you. I'm not inventing anything new. I'm not adding anything to what I've heard from my Guru Maharaj. I'm not subtracting anything. I'm simply giving you exactly what I have heard from my spiritual master. Why? Because this message has the great power to deliver anybody who can submissively hear it and put it into practice. This message, I'm going to repeat that. This message has the power to deliver anyone who submissively hears it and follows it. What the message that I'm giving you here tonight, this has the power to completely save the whole world. The whole world can become completely transformed by this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm traveling all over the world with my wife here, Vishnu Priya Devi Dasi. We are traveling all over the world simply for the purpose of spreading this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. In every continent we are traveling. We want that everybody in every part of the world shall have the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. Because there's no other way you can be happy. You think you'd be happy by money? Think again. The rich people are miserable. Look at the ultra-rich people, the most miserable people you've ever seen. Money can't buy you happiness. You think by becoming powerful you can become happy? With some big political post? They're in constant fear of their lives and being assassinated. Is it? They can't even eat anything. They're afraid to eat it. There might be some poison in it. You see, Indira Gandhi was greatly fearful, and one day one of her own bodyguards shot her dead, if you can imagine. One of her own bodyguards assassinated her. Just see, big powerful position, her own bodyguard assassinated her. So you can't become happy by money, by power, by becoming a big learned scholar. You can't be happy in that way either. There's only one way to become happy, and that is to re-establish yourself in your original spiritual identity as a servant of God. It's the only way you can become happy. Because any other activity that you may do to try to become happy is like a fish on the beach. A fish that was washed up on the beach and he's trying to be happy and making some arrangement on the land. Can he be happy on the land? No, he cannot be happy on the land. He's a creature of the water. Jalaja. He's a creature of the water. The only way he can become happy is to be back in the water. So there's no material arrangement you can make to be happy in this world. Even if you become Brahmaji, the top demigod of the whole universe, you still cannot be happy here. It's impossible. Because this is not your actual home. Your actual home is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His spiritual world. You see, so you need to get back there. And the spiritual master is that person who has the power and the knowledge of how to get you back there. You simply have to take the instruction and the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, and he will help you to regain your original identity that you had in the spiritual world before you fell down here. Your original identity is a servant of God, a servant of Krishna, or Narayan. You've had that identity. Now you've forgotten it. The spiritual master can help you to regain it if you're willing to hear submissively, you're ready to serve him, and willing to follow his instructions. Then you can achieve that topmost dimension. But the spiritual master has to be bona fide. If he's not a pure devotee, if he's not a liberated soul, his instructions will not liberate you. The spiritual master must be a liberated soul. A person who is not liberated, he cannot liberate us. So the spiritual master has to be a liberated soul who is not within the modes of this material nature, who is situated beyond the modes of material nature. He has to be completely liberated soul. And then by following the instructions of that completely liberated pure devotee of the Lord, then we can become liberated. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah. Okay.
Generally people understand liberated means after that. So how the liberated spiritual master can deliver us?
Yes, normally people think liberation means after death, but that's not true because most people don't get liberated when they die. 99.99% of the world population when they die, they don't get liberated. They remain in karma chakra. They take another birth according to their conditioned nature at the time of death. They take another body in this material existence. Death does not mean liberation in most cases. It means you continue your bondage. You're just switching from one type of imprisonment to another type of imprisonment. Real liberation means to be fully engaged. As Rupa Goswami confirms, Iha yasya harira dashe karmana manasa gira nikala svapyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. Anybody who engages fully their mind, their body, and their words in the transcendental loving service of Lord Sri Krishna is a liberated soul even in this material existence. So liberated means free from lust, free from anger, free from greed, free from madness, free from illusion, free from envy, completely absorbed in Krishna's service. That is the meaning of liberation. He's living already in his eternal identity as a spiritual being. He's no longer identifying, I'm male, I'm female, I'm Danish, I'm Indian, or whatever it may be. He's not identifying with any of these things. He's simply identifying, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That's a liberated soul, you see. That's liberated. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
How do we, as a conditioned soul, realize that someone is liberated?
How do we realize who is liberated? Well, there's a number of ways you can do it. One way is you have to study the scriptures and understand what are the qualities and the characteristics of a liberated soul. That's one way. Another way is by following his instructions. If you become liberated, they know he was liberated. Another way of knowing, you see. And truth works. If by following his instructions, you become liberated, just like how do I know Prabhupada's liberated, you see? Because I feel how by following Prabhupada's instructions, I'm becoming liberated. I'm experiencing it. In these 40 years that I followed Prabhupada strictly, I'm seeing how Prabhupada's liberating me. Therefore, I can understand he's a liberated soul. So by studying the scriptures, that's one, and by practical experience, that's the other. You can see who's liberated. You see. Question?
You mentioned that in this age, the disciples should serve the spiritual master not by bringing firewood, but by chanting the holy name.
That's right.
You mentioned one verse. What was that?
So the verses in the Mundaka Upanishad. Tad vaganartam sagarum eva vagasat samit panahi shrotiyam brahmanishtam. Samit panahi means bringing firewood. Of course, sometimes we have our disciples do that. When we have an initiation yagya, we say, bring some firewood for the yagya. We do that too. Make sure to bring some good firewood. Sometimes they bring some really bad firewood that burns out really quickly. This hardwood is the best thing. Thick hardwood, it burns a long time. So I do ask my disciples to bring good quality firewood for the yagya. We do that too, but the main thing is the Sankirtan yagya, which is the greater fire yagya. And the greater firewood is, and the greater fire is the Sankirtan yagya in the city. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for the wonderful class. Since you brought up this point, like following the good bona fide parampara, like what happens if you follow other parampara, like basically any parampara, like if the person is, the guru is authorized or bona fide in the sense, he is himself pure basically, and he is giving the pure knowledge to
anyone who is a pure Vaishnava. Picking a pure Vaishnava coming in a Vaishnava disciplic succession, he's a bona fide guru. But it's very clearly stated in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, if he's not a Vaishnava, then he should be rejected.
Yeah, actually, my question is like, if he is the proper person in the sense he is a scholar and he teaches good things to other people, what happens if he left the planet? Like, will he give the liberation to be liberation in the sense? At least, higher planet.
What's his question?
He says any guru who gives a good knowledge to somebody, so he is liberated or what?
Yeah, will he liberate his disciples?
Will he liberate his disciples? Just teach the good things.
No, good is not good enough. It has to be perfect. There's ignorant things, passionate things, good things, but it has to be pure goodness. Simply to teach people to be good, pious, and moral, that's okay, but it's not enough. Simply to be a pious person and do good to others, that's very good, but that's not enough to get liberated. It's not enough, because let's say I try to do, I just want to do good, I'm a wealthy man, so I'm going to build a charity hospital to give free medical care to the poor, you see. So now all those people that got free medical care because of me, they owe me a karmic debt. They have to give me free medical care in the next lifetime. So that means I get to take birth again to get free medical care as a reward for all my good activities. You understand? So simply material goodness or piety doesn't liberate you. It puts you in a more elevated position, but you're still caught up in karma chakra. Now I get rewarded. I get to come back life after life and get free medical care from all those people who got free medical care from me. That means I have to get sick. So I get free medical care from all the people I gave free medical care to in my charity hospital. So good is nice, but it's not good enough to get liberated. If you want liberation, you have to act on the transcendental platform beyond even material piety. So the spiritual master has to engage you on the transcendental platform of pure bhakti, pure devotional service to the Lord. And here's another example. Goodness, okay, that's like watering the leaves on the tree. But how good is it ultimately? If you simply water the leaves on the tree, you don't water the root, is the tree going to do well or not? You have to water the root of the tree. So Krishna or God or Narayan, Vishnu, he is the root of the tree. So unless the spiritual master actually engages you direct in direct bhakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, You're not actually doing pure, you're not, your goodness is not pure. It's not perfect. It's imperfect goodness. You see? Unless your goodness is perfect, by becoming to the transcendental level, you're still caught up in the karma chakra. Watering the leaves on the tree doesn't nourish the tree. Feeding the bodily parts without giving the food to the stomach doesn't nourish the bodily parts. So materially good activities don't actually touch the real need of the soul that you're trying to help. They don't really do it. I may give a poor man some food. The next day he'll be hungry again. And he'll still get old, he'll still get sick, and he'll still die. My material piety didn't give him the ultimate relief from miseries. It gave him a little temporary relief, and that's all. But when you come to the platform of pure goodness, of pure bhakti, then everything you do is actually bringing about the liberation of every single living entity from the cycle of birth and death. Everything you do is contributing to that. So therefore, if the spiritual master is really teaching you to do good, in the real sense of good, then he's engaging you in pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You understand? Otherwise, his goodness is imperfect. There's material goodness and there's spiritual goodness, you see. Material goodness, that is called sattva. Spiritual goodness is shuddha sattva. Why is it called shuddha or pure? You see? There's material goodness and pure goodness. That means material goodness is impure goodness. So any impurity obliges me to remain in karma chakra. Any impurity. Even the slight impurity of material goodness, even that impurity obliges me to remain within karma chakra. So you must have a spiritual master who engages you 24 hours a day in pure devotional service. That you must find if you want liberation. Okay?
So is it in one sense that anyone who gives us guidance and does not give us, teaches us about pure devotional service, in reality they are not bona fide, they are causing us to suffer.
Yes, that's correct.
Then,
anybody who gives us guidance, although they may mean well, if they don't actually bring us to the point of pure devotional service, then their guidance is a disservice, that's why.
Isn't it causing us more suffering?
That's, yes. She's asking this. Is it causing us more suffering? The answer is yes. You had a question?
During your discourse, you told that the butcher, because he's killing the animals, he should try to change his profession. It was more personal question for me because our work also involves sacrificing the animals for the research. So that means...
So what's the question?
He says that he said about the butcher, but he's asking the question for himself personally, not as a butcher, but he was...
He's doing research on the animals? Yes. Actually, according to Ayurveda, Prabhupada is told that sometimes an animal can be killed to make medicine. Because it's better the animal dies than a human being dies. So according to Vedic principles, even though now there's a big propaganda that we shouldn't do any research on animals, according to Ayurveda, an animal can actually be sacrificed to make a medicine to save a human being if there's an urgent need, you see. So how that would apply to the animal research, that depends on different sort of situations. It really depends. Those people who are doing all the animal, the people who are in charge of the animal research, they're eating animals also, you see. They're doing so much cruelty to the animals by eating them. So they're already, the people who are in charge of these animal research projects, they're already committing gross atrocity against the animals by eating them, which is not necessary. It may be necessary, as Prabhupada gives the example of killing a goat to produce a certain type of medicine. It may be necessary sometimes to do that. If there's a higher cause, even insulin, it comes from a calf's liver, I think. And Prabhupada authorized the disciple to use insulin. Of course, now they have synthetic insulin, that's another thing. Then they didn't have it, apparently. So, for medicine, it's different. It can be different for medicine. But for eating, which is not necessary, which is not even healthy to eat meat, animals can be used for medicine in the Vedic system, but for eating, it's not healthy. If you want to enjoy the blood of the cow, then take the milk. Milk is nothing but a transformation of the blood. The same blood is transformed into milk by by God's arrangement. You want to eat, you want to have cow flesh and blood? Okay, the milk is a transformation of the flesh and blood of the cow. Take the milk. There's so many nice milk products we can make. Is it? So eating and medicine, there is a distinction in the Vedic system. There is a distinction. Now whether they're going too far, that's another matter. That's a detail. But the principle is that animals can be used for medicine. Because that's something if it's absolutely necessary to save a human life, that's something that can be done in the Vedic system. But eating them, there's no reason. It's not even good for our health to eat them. No reason. And the amount of cows for medicinal uses would be far, far less than the eating use. The amount of cows that are being killed every day, the millions of cows that are being killed every day, it's just unspeakable, an unspeakable horror, an unspeakable atrocity. In the karmic reaction, we are getting it in so many ways. Terrorism is a reaction for terrorizing the cows. Now we're getting being terrorized by human beings. That's a karmic reaction. Terrorism is a karmic reaction for slaughterhouses. If you want to stop terrorism, the governments talk about stopping terrorism. Well, shut down the slaughterhouses and shut down the abortion clinics. The terrorism will go away immediately. Terrorism is simply a karmic reaction for terrorizing the animals and the unborn babies. You see? But these foolish leaders, they don't know the science of karma. They don't know how karma works. And therefore, they're misguiding the human civilization. We need to get enlightened leaders in the government, like Arjuna, like Yudhisthira, like Parikshit Maharaj. And then the whole world can become happy. Any other questions? Okay, if there's nothing else, that means you've had enough for tonight. I will be giving a class tomorrow morning at 7:45 at the temple, and also the Sunday feast lecture tomorrow at what time?
A quarter to four.
Quarter to four. So I'll be giving two more lectures here before I head on Vishnupriya Maharaji and I head on to Estonia on Monday for a lecture series over there. So,
Ajay is having some question.
Question? Okay.
Yeah.
Could some sit right here? There's tons of space. I don't know why they even was a hide in the hallway. There's a huge space right here. Okay.
I just want to ask, why did God create us in the first place?
Why did God
create us in the first place?
All right. Okay, his question is very nice. Why did God create us in the first place? This is described by Srila Prabhupada in his Bhagavad Gita purport, that God has expanded all of us from himself for the purpose of expanding his own divine bliss. Just like your mother and father, to expand the happiness of their household, they brought you into the world, you see. to expand the happiness of their household life. And they brought you in to increase the bliss, so you could participate in the bliss of their family, of their relationship. So in a similar way, although in a much more powerful, dynamic way, obviously, God is certainly more potent than we are. He has expanded from Himself an unlimited number of living beings to participate in His spiritual bliss along with Him. So you exist for the purpose of having a loving, blissful relationship with God. That's why you exist. So that's why you can't be happy unless you become a devotee. Unless you become a devotee, you're denying your own nature. But if you become a devotee, now you're affirming your actual nature. And you're being yourself. You see, our philosophy is very simple. Know who you are and be who you are. If somebody says, what is your philosophy? You just tell them, know who you are and be who you are. That is our philosophy. I want to know who I am. And then once I know who I am, I'd like to be who I am, sir. I don't want to be somebody that I'm not. I mean, that's pretty weird to try to be somebody. That's insanity, trying to be something that you're not. But the modern day society, they are trying to make you a lunatic. The material society is training you to be a lunatic. They're telling you, you're that body. You're a man. You're a woman. You're Indian. You're Danish. You're American. Now be a good man. Be a good boy. Be a good girl. This is an illusion. You're not that body. No wonder people are so frustrated and they take a gun and they go down to the school and start shooting all the other students. People are so frustrated because they don't even know who they are. People are completely bewildered. They commit suicide because they don't know who they are. They're bewildered. It's time now the leaders take this message of Bhagavad Gita. It should be taught in every school, in every university, in every government house. There should be Hare Krishna Kirtan so that people can actually wake up and understand who they are and the whole world can become happy. Okay? Yes?
Prabhu, what is the difference between spiritual happiness and material happiness?
What is the difference between spiritual happiness and material happiness?
What is the difference between spiritual happiness and material happiness? The difference is very distinct. Material happiness is illusory and spiritual happiness is genuine. Here's an example of illusory happiness. A big truck pulls up in front of your house and says, you just inherited 1 trillion euros and here it is. And they bring all the cases and cases of euro, 100 euro notes or 500 euro notes, whatever the biggest denomination is. They bring all these euros into your house and you go, wow, I'm the wealthiest man in the whole world. I just got 1 trillion euros. I'm the wealthiest person in the whole world. And you get so excited and you're so happy. You think, well, I'm going to have a big party and invite all my friends over, you know. And you figure, well, Monday I'll take it to the bank and deposit it. Right now I'll just take my credit card and have a big bash, you know, a big, huge celebration. I rent a big hotel room, you know, max out my credit cards, have a big, huge celebration, invite all, have big, big dinners, dancing, music, and orchestra. I'd spend, you know, $50,000 on a big bash for all my friends to celebrate, you see. And then on Monday, I'm all excited. I take a rental truck. I go down to the bank with all the notes, and deposit my 1 trillion euros, and they say, "Sorry, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, but this is all counterfeit money, is it? I don't know how to break this to you, but this is counterfeit. What? It's counterfeit. Oh my God! I just spent $50,000 on the bash this weekend. I maxed out my credit cards. So what was the happiness you had over the weekend? With your $50,000 bash or all your friends to celebrate your 1 trillion euros. What kind of happiness was it? Spiritual or material? Material happiness. You thought you were happy, but it was an illusion. You didn't have genuine happiness at all, but you thought you were happy. That's material happiness. There's actually no happiness in this material world. We just think it's happy until we finally realize there was nothing actually there. And I was cheated. That's material happiness. But spiritual happiness is genuine happiness that never goes away. As the great Indian king, Maharaj Vrishabhadev, he told his son, Nayang deho deha bhajang naloke, kashtan kamanka arhate vid bhujange, tapodyavam putchakiyena satvam, shujajasrad brahma salkam tvanantam. He says, my dear boys, don't labor after this material happiness like dogs and hogs that eat stool. Better to do austerity or tapa for realizing the Supreme Truth. Tapo divyam, you see. Because then you will achieve that happiness, that spiritual happiness, brahma saukyam tvanantam, that spiritual happiness which goes on increasing forever. So spirit, material happiness evaporates into nothing. And spiritual happiness expands unlimitedly forever. That is the difference.
Thank you,
Prabhu.
One more question. Actually, Parikshit Maharaj has been liberated in 7 days. Will it be possible in these days also?
Question?
Parikshit Maharaj was liberated in 7 days.
Yes, can you be liberated in this age in 7 days? It's possible, although generally it takes quite a while to become completely liberated. You have to take to become liberated. Generally, requires that you have to, you know, have faith in the process, associate with devotees, get initiated by the bona fide spiritual master, follow the rules and regulations in his direction, and this way become free from all unwanted habits, and this way become fixed up in devotional service, develop a taste for the name, become attached to Krishna, and then finally you have a spontaneous awakening of bhakti from within, transcendental emotions arise, and then finally you become perfect and you have constant, uninterrupted loving exchange with Krishna directly at every minute. That's the way it normally works, and that takes quite a while. It's a long, long time to achieve that. Although it can be achieved very quickly. That's called Kripa Siddha. Sadhana Siddha means you do this, you get initiated, you follow the system. Kripa Siddha means it can come, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, it can come immediately, anytime. So the best thing to do is try for both. Do the sadhana. Dedicate yourself to a whole life of sadhana and always beg for the mercy that you can get liberated, fully liberated right now. That I recommend doing both. Plug into the sadhana bhakti, the lifetime process of purification. The same thing, always beg for the mercy. Because in fact, even within 7 seconds, you become liberated. Why 7 days? The great Indian king, Maharaj Kadvanga, earthly king, the demigods were being conquered by the demons in the heavenly planets. And this Maharaj Kadvanga was so powerful, the demigod said, Maharaj Kadvanga, please help us. We're being defeated by the demons. Please, please come and help us. So he went to the heavenly planets and fought off the demons for many, many long years. He fought with great strength. And he successfully conquered those demons, defeated them. And then the demigods were so pleased, they said, whatever boon is in our power, just tell us what you want and we'll give it to you. He's a very intelligent man, great king. You see, in those days, the kings, they were Rajarsi. They were Raja and Rishi at the same time. They were king and they were saint at the same time. He was a great saint, Raja Rishi. That is real Kshatriya, you see, they're Raja Rishis. So, he said, he thought deeply, he said, just tell me when I'm going to die. That's all I really need. Just the one boon I ask is just tell me exactly when death will come to me. That's the one boon I want, so I'll be prepared. I can take shelter of Krishna, you see. Just tell me when I will die. And they said, oh, actually your death is coming right now? He said, thank you very much. And he took shelter of Krishna and immediately became liberated. Just within 7 minutes, less than 7 minutes, he was liberated. So generally it's a lifetime of sadhana, but it can come also within an instant. By the mercy of the spiritual master and the great sages, it can come immediately, instantly. So I recommend, as I said, try both, go for both. Sadhana, go for sadhana siddha and kripa siddha, both at the same time. Okay? Yeah.
Isn't it in this Kali Yuga, it's very easy to get liberated? So, by chanting the holy names of the Lord.
What's the question?
Question, this is what I'm saying. So isn't it easy in this lifetime, which is very short period of lifetime?
Yes. So the question is, isn't it easy in this age? The answer, it is easy. Because to be liberated within a short span of 100 years, that's quite an easy feat. In the Satya Yuga, it took Valmiki Muni 60,000 years to get liberated by doing the Hatha Yoga system, the Ashtanga system. 60,000 years it took Valmiki Muni to become liberated. In this age, in a mere lifespan of, 70, 80 years, you can get liberated. 50 years. Simply, if you'll take up this process of Krishna Bhakti, get initiated, take up this process of chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, and you live your life in Krishna consciousness, offer your day to Krishna every day, the chances are very good at the time of death you'll remember Krishna and you'll immediately go back to the spiritual world. Chances are very good. If you sincerely follow this process, your chances of making it in one lifetime are very, very good chance. So this is the best age for instant nirvana, quick liberation. The best age. Anyone else? Yeah?
There are people who refuse to drink milk because their cows have been treated in a cruel way, been injected hormones to get more milk, so they suffer. So the question is it correct to exclude milk from diet because of this reason?
Well, there is a lot of non-hormone milk. The hormone milk is not very healthy. There's a lot of people selling, a lot of vendors now selling the non-hormone milk. In the U.S., I don't know about here in this part of the world, but in the U.S., the major grocery stores are selling non-hormone milk because people don't want this hormone junk. So one should definitely avoid that hormone milk. I've even heard that it makes children grow artificially when they drink it. So, I don't know why. The governments are crazy. I mean, the governments are really crazy, We have to, the best thing is to have our own cows fed organically and let them die, live a natural life. The best thing is to have our own cows. Every ISKCON center should have a farm connected with it, an ISKCON cow protection project. So that every ISKCON temple can have natural ahimsa milk. That's the best solution that we recommend. Every ISKCON center should have a farm connected with it. So every ISKCON devotee can drink the milk. All the community members. And even we should and we should pay more for that milk. Even if it's cheaper at the store, that's all right. Even if we have to pay double, we should pay the milk from the protected cows. You see? If there's a farm, if devotees start a farm project here and they bring milk and they want to sell it, everyone should buy the milk, even at double or triple the price, to support the protection of cows. It's a very important thing, this cow protection. Everyone should drink the cow, but think, well, it's a little cheaper to buy at the grocery store. No, even if we had to pay more, buy the milk from the protected cow. We need to establish cow protection on this planet. And that means money also is required to keep the thing. So if we have money, we're buying milk from the grocery store, and there's devotees selling milk from protected cows, we should buy the milk from the devotees. Anything else? Yeah.
I was not for this lecture, but about this question, I just have one doubt. The doubt is... For doing call protection, for having such projects, we need investment, we need money. But normally we see the devotees of Krishna, they struggle materially in many sense. So, if we have somebody, if Krishna provides money, then it would be easier. But in many cases, it is not the case.
Ah. Well, the temple should provide it then, if you're a poor man. You can't afford milk. The temple should give you some milk. There should be some milk at the temple. For devotees who are poor, the Food for Life program means if some people are Prabhupada said food for the Hare Krishna food for leaf, he called it. Within 10 kilometers of every ISKCON temple, nobody should be going hungry. So if you're going hungry, you can't afford even milk. The temple should be able to provide you with your milk. You see, that's what Prabhupada's vision was. If you're so poor, man, you can't even take milk, proper milk diet. The temple should be able to help you out if you're a poor man. You see?
No, it's not about the milk. I mean, the cow protection project. It's a
cow
big project.
Protection plan.
So for that, if some of the devotees are enthusiastic and they want to go ahead and do it, but many a times due to material circumstances, it doesn't happen. So
yeah, that's it's a problem right now in our society. So, and one of the problems is that I've heard that the people don't want to buy the milk, the householders don't want to buy the milk from the devotees because it's more expensive than the milk of the grocery store. That's why I'm saying if devotees are willing, if anybody's willing to make that endeavor to start a cow protection project, then all the devotees in that whole area should support that devotee by purchasing the milk. They should support it. So it's affordable, practical for devotees to do this. We should think we should be work together as a family, you know, to help each other. Just like in the U.S., you have the what are they called? Not the Mennonites, but the Amish people. They're amazing. These people, of course, they don't use modern machinery. They don't use electricity. They use horses, and they live. They completely avoid the modern day machinery. They don't use lawnmowers. They don't use tractors, they don't use automobiles, they just use horses. And they have a whole culture of successful people. They have a whole culture where they don't use any of the modern day petroleum powered devices. And our devotees were doing cow protection in the same area, and they said, for you it's hard because you didn't grow up this way. You see, they've done it for many generations. These people were doing that even before the automobile was invented. And it's been passed on from generation to generation. They know how to do it because it's their culture. We don't have the culture of living on the land and raising the cows. We've lost that culture. So it's very difficult now to establish it. There's no doubt it's very difficult. But if any devotees have the inspiration and the drive to do it, we should give them all support and help. That's the point. Because it's not easy right now. It's very difficult for ISKCON to establish cow protection as a fact. Very difficult for ISKCON to establish in the Western countries. It's been very difficult as a fact.
What you said, that the devotee may be enthusiastic, but we have also seen the other side of the devotees. Who are enthusiastic, they go, they get everything, but they cannot maintain properly. It's a waste of money. So just enthusiasm is not needed. It needs the proper work, labor, and all that.
We have our cow protection ministry, Balabhadra Prabhu. So any devotees who are interested to do such projects, they should contact our Minister of Cow Protection for practical instructions on what to do.
Like in Austin, the devotees were very eager, so I told them, you know, just let us work the line we have it. And they could hardly work on it.
We're not used to getting our hands dirty. You know? I just want to sit at a computer all day.
About,
you know?
What is this talk about having a farm and get the cows and we cannot work a little small area?
Go on, work in the vegetable garden in the backyard. They couldn't even do that much. Oh, I don't know, I can't handle it. I'm working in the garden for 20 minutes and I've had enough. Yeah. Okay, anything else?
So if we spend so much money to get a farm, then it goes bankrupt. It's useless. It's lost money. It's not that we don't want them to do it, but they should work hard. And I know also in Canada, one grahastha had money and he bought the farm and he got the devotees. The devotees were just living on the farm, enjoying. But they didn't want it to work. And finally they had to sell the farm. So it's not just enthusiasm. One has to work. One to really work hard.
It takes a lot of purity to actually do that.
Yeah.
lot of purity and sincerity and determination to establish the Vedic culture for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. So anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Gopala Ki Jai.